Blog Talk Radio.
We're in.
Hi, we're there, yeah.
Okay, I think we're live. All right, introduce us.
Okay.
We had a little technical difficulty there, audience. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Anne's having Mars afflicting her moon. All right, Heather, you want to introduce us?
Yes.
We should be
welcome
live, according to the
radio.
Yeah, okay.
And welcome to Access Astrology. We are three astrologers happy to tell you about what excites us most in the world of astrology. We find astrology a fascinating way to navigate the world and help us work with one another in a healthier, better, and more aligned way, and we hope to share this with you. So we've got some interesting aspects coming up this week and some interesting questions from our callers. But first, let me introduce you to the rest of us. This is Heather Rowan Robbins speaking to you from St. Paul, Minnesota, right by the Mississippi River, and we are joined by Mark.
Mark Waltz over by the Hudson River and in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And?
In Ann Ortley. I'm up here at my bright red desk at the upper on the Upper East Side. So always
okay.
Good, always
wonderful.
Good. Yes, yes, we love that. So.
Yes, and the moon has just headed into Taurus after a sparky Aries moon weekend. And that fire this weekend was really great for fireworks.
And for
I
beaches.
Know that,
and for
beaches. And
for beaches.
And for, you know, a couple of family arguments that I heard of around the globe. But most of it was that I think of that Aries moon as naturally, it is the Independence Day. Whether it's the independence of our country or of our person, that this is the weekend when we really hate to be told what to do. We really are here to celebrate freedom. Not every July 4th, but this last one with that moon in Aries that danced on Uranus and Jupiter. Now today, Uranus is stationary, turning retrograde. It has been moving forward at a fast clip for a long time, and it entered Aries and started to begin this whole new era and started its square to Pluto for the next couple of years, and now it begins to turn backwards and gives us a chance to catch up. It may slow down the rate of change. We've got enough to deal with already on our plate. The Uranus symbolizes both the personal changes but also the technological changes that we experience, the revolutions in the world. And I see often when Uranus goes retrograde that already the work is already in front of us. We know what we have to do. You know, the Gulf disaster, oil disaster, has put very clearly on the plate of the world what are the next technological breakthroughs that we need. There is no doubt about it. We know what we need. We need that independent energy. We need renewable resources, and we need to deal, and we need decentralized power, and we need to do it now. And so Uranus can go retrograde for a while, can let us catch up. It doesn't need to keep pushing the pace of the change. But this is not a great week for electronic changes. I'm trying to switch from one computer to another because my first computer faded out and my second computer's not quite online yet. And I'm seeing the technological difficulties this week.
We had technological difficulties logging in the show.
Just logging in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And have you seen any others, Mark? Have you noticed? How are you experiencing Uranus stationary?
I actually haven't picked up too much on that yet. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's behind the scenes.
And it may just be that sometimes we just want to sit still.
Right.
I found a lot of people, even though the moon was in Aries, were exhausted this last weekend. Just tired. And it felt like maybe that Uranus, that electrical quality was, you know, holding still, not moving at the rate that it would like to. Mars is coming up to conjunct Saturn, and our energy just, we're asked to slow down, move slowly, do it right, not push, push, push at the moment. Energy levels may be a little low. Anne, how are you feeling it?
I think, you know, what it's been for me is just feeling like everything's going too fast because of the that the Jupiter-Uranus is like, okay, I have to do this now. Okay, I finished that. Now I have to do this. Okay, now I have to do that. Okay. And it's been this very kind of crazy, frantic, frantic schedule.
And you're saying, please slow down.
Please slow down. So, because for me, my Jupiter and Uranus are joined anyway, natally. So when it kicks, it's definitely, it falls in the category of, oi, please leave me alone, you know. So it kind of falls in, you know, leave me alone. So I've definitely been feeling very, whatever the right word for it is, kind of tired. tired. So.
That could be the eclipse season, too.
That can be the eclipses, too, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, right.
How do you see that, Mark?
We're right in the middle of these two eclipses. And a lot of times, you know, there's a theme of change with that, and sometimes, too, an apprehension about, you know, what's going on. Something is changing, you know. There's the feeling that these big lineups are happening. And in fact, that's true. Because, you know, think of my size compared with the globe that I'm standing on right now, right? My size compared to the planet Earth. My size compared with the moon. And then the sun. And the distances between all of those. And then think of the coincidence as they line up, 1, 2, 3 in a row, right? And that's what it takes to have an eclipse. So we're all sort of in awe because we sense that lineup happening. And in a normal full moon or new moon, they don't line up exactly 1, 2, 3 in a row. There's a little, you know, the moon is a little above or a little below where the sun has been traveling for the day, and so we don't get an eclipse. But then twice a year, they line up 1, 2, 3, and we catch, you know, the light of the sun is either blocked by the Earth, or we have the moon move across in front of the sun, and so there's some part of us that really has to be in awe of that because we understand something really big is happening. And so I think when we're in these seasons, we get that feeling. And, you know, we feel, well, it's very special. It's very awesome. And it's also way beyond our control. It's something cosmic going on. So, you know, that's what happens.
I find it very amazing on eclipses, too, that what, you know, the old story, whatever it was, really wants to finish up and leave, and you have an opportunity to say, okay, let me let it go. And it you know, because you see things on a whole different level, you really do, you see the world differently because the light is so different. And I think it kind of falls in the category of, well, what are we trying to accomplish here? And what do we need to do to get that to happen? And if we can figure it out, we're good to go. So, and I'm having a
my image has always been that, you know, eclipses form astrological acupuncture, and that they really energize the conduits, the neurological conduits that are already in place in our charts, especially if they hit right on it. Especially if you get the needle right on the right place in the energy pathways of the body, it makes great changes. But what it does often, as it unsticks the energy, it precipitates something that's been working for a long time, like you said, letting go. And it's precipitating a process that's already in motion and speeding it up and intensifying it. But it can be pretty amazing that way. Did before we go on too much about the astrology of the week, we like to finish up with that these days. We want to open up the lines for questions from the audience.
No, we can't because I can't get into the system.
Oh, you can't.
No, I'm not. It's not letting me in. Huh? I'm trying.
We won't take the phone calls.
Hopefully, we won't be
today. But we do have one to deal with from the email. And if someone wants to quick email me at RowanRobbins@AOL.com, RoanRobbins@AOL.com. We'll do our best to answer those emails that we get during this podcast.
And I will keep trying to sign us in.
Okay.
Because I can't get it.
Technical difficulty.
Technical difficulty. You're in a station, man, you know. Oi, oi, oi.
All
right.
The question is an interesting one, and it's one that, you know, Anne, you've brought up a couple of times. You're a yod specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I work a lot with inconjuncts, but you have a particular skill with yods. And the question was from a John L., what is a yod and what does it mean in our charts? I have one and two of my children have one. And I'm not sure if I'm seeing this correctly. My oldest son, Jordan, seems to have three overlaid or close together. So, and what's the question? So for, it is for John L. And her, this is her birth date, which is 12/9/56 at 10:50 a.m. in Torrance, California. And we'll start with that to begin with. And what do you feel about yods in general? Let's give them a theory and then let's apply it to specifics. First of all, for the general audience, what is a yod and why would we care?
Well, the reason we care is because they're karmically very big developmental tensions, meaning that you are, when you're having a yod, what you have in your chart is you have a lot of developmental tension around building structure or creating things. So it is essentially three planets that are fighting with each other. They are in different signs, they are in different elements, and they are in different modes. So the signs fight, the elements fight, the modes fight, and basically you have this big argument in your chart where they all have a different
opinion. And a yod is that you're describing the inconjunct.
Yeah, well, the inconjunct is two yods.
And a yod is two inconjuncts to the same planet.
Right. But so it's three different planets all with opinions about how things should be done, and none of them are agreeing, and they all have a different way that they want things to roll. So when you see that, you kind of go, okay, how do we get to the next place with this? And so part of what happens with an inconjunct or a yod is that the planets fight, boom, 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 boom. They all have a different opinion. They all are different modes, fixed, Aries, fixed, cardinal, or mutable. So one wants to stay the same, one wants to change, one wants to drive things. Then they're in different elements. They're in one planet will be in either fire or water, and the other two will be in earth and there will be a sextile, so that's between the earth and the water, the fire and the air. And then they argue with the planet that's in either the opposite sign, either fire or air, from the earth and the water. So earth and water get along well, fire and air don't get along that well with them, so they're going to argue with those planets. It's a very argumentative aspect. But the good part of it,
I often felt that
is,
sort of, mm-hmm. I often just a description of that, just to start it, and it always reminded me of, you know, junior high school when two people get along together and they gang up on a third.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that,
yeah.
There's a little bit of that feeling in a yacht.
Yeah.
As you're saying, the advantage of it is?
The advantage of it is they all have different opinions and they see the world differently. And the other advantage of it is it's a live-in-the-moment aspect where it really encourages you to live in the moment and not necessarily argue or fight. It says live in the moment, just go and do what's right before you, and if you do it that way, it works. The other thing is it has a great deal of effort or energy behind it if you have a kind of like when you're lifting a heavy table or something like that. You know, the heavy table, then you go, okay, 1, 2, 3, lift, and everybody carries it and moves it and gets it accomplished. So it's got a great deal of accomplishment energy towards it if you use it well. if you don't, it can really cause a lot of pain in the ass problems just because you can't get things to move the way you would like them to. So I find it a fascinating
aspect.
Well,
it also sounds that I do, too, and that it often, you know, you mentioned that the slang term for it is the finger of God, because there is something karmic about the itch that's involved. And I often think of it as the dermatologist with bad skin. It's like it's something that bugs you, and it's something that you're going to have to deal with. It's a little bit like Chiron in that aspect, but it's a little bit less about healing, but more that the training that you get dealing with this discomfort, because the inconjunct is such an itchy, uncomfortable aspect. It's not terrible. It's not confrontatory. It's not opposite. You said it's two beings trying to work together with Zippo in common.
Mm-hmm.
And that itch then creates breadth and understanding. And if you can, it's always driving you. It's often points to something, a drive that is actually a key part of the person's success in the long run. Trying to reconcile that, trying to get all these pieces together may cause an ambition or motivates in a way that not many aspects do.
Right. Highly motivating.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it can be high motivation and such high frustration that the person has trouble figuring out how to ultimately get it to work. And so the frustration wins out, and it can end up, you know, being a lot of different attempts, but a strong feeling of futility along the way. And that's where just, you know, giving up on trying to figure it out often brings the correct answer. You know, if you try too hard, keep running into the same frustrations.
I agree. I think it's a sort of a tangential approach. And it's interesting in the case of this woman who suggests that she was born, as we gave the information before, December 9th, 1956, at 10:50 a.m. in Torrance, California. That puts her sun in Sagittarius and her moon on the ascendant, both of those in Pisces. So you've got a paradox right there with the outward-going sun sign and this very introspective, very complicated psychic relationship to the mother of being born on the moon with the moon in Pisces on the ascendant. And that seems to echo with the yod between very sensitive Neptune in Scorpio, Pluto in Virgo, both in conjuncting that Mars in Aries. And that Mars in Aries, it's not just a yod. It's a yod with an opposition to it. I always think of it as an arrow shooting, because that Mars is exaggerated. Not only is it its own sign of Aries, but it's opposed Jupiter, so it's a swollen Mars, or it's an enlarged Mars. And that Mars is also part of a grand trine. So her chart, and it's part of a T-square, a grand trine, and a yod. So I think the yod is almost upstaged in this position by the other two aspects. But there's no doubt that her Mars in Aries, this intensity of Mars in the first house, that warrior nature, that protector, that emergency medical technician, that, you know, aggravated heroic aspect of Mars in the first house, trying to reconcile that with the very sensitive and shy Pisces and the laissez-faire Sag and the very private Scorpio seems to be, you know, the driving paradox in her charts. Or her chart's pretty complicated around that. What did you see, Anne?
I think one of the things that when you have a yod is like looking and saying, what is your vision of how you're going to live your life? And one of the things this chart really needs to focus on is how to do that. What is their vision for their life? What do they want to do? Mm-hmm. How do they want to get there? And I think if we look at it
rather
that way,
rather than let the Mars and Aries react.
Yeah. And you know, in that visionary thing, that if she can give herself permission to do it, it really works beautifully. And if not, then there's problems with it. So I think that the...
Then this is a chart that could easily shoot itself in the foot over and over again by just refusing to fit into anybody else's paradigms so that she's still letting them run the show.
Yeah.
If she doesn't choose to do it.
If she doesn't choose to do it herself, right. And I think that's really the thing to remember is how do we, you know, when you're living with a chart that has this kind of condition in it, and a lot of people have yods. I also heard an interesting thing about a yod that to look at the parents above you, because very often the parents have unresolved squares in this with the same planets or unresolved T squares or oppositions. And what the child then does is they're there to really work the aspect out because they can't get away from it with the inconjunct. They have to integrate it, or it'll be really difficult to get anything accomplished. So the parents kind of stick the kid, no offense to your parents, stick the kid with that aspect and say, okay, now you're stuck with it. You know, what you resolve it because we have been unable to. So it's a fascinating aspect from a karmic point of view, from a family point of view, if you do family astrology, where we look and we see what the family patterns in the chart are, because, you know, that whole sins of the father passed down to the kids.
Well, as a matter of fact, we have her two children's charts.
Uh-huh.
We
okay,
don't have
so
her parents'
good, yeah.
charts. You say that with that the yod is... has an unreconciled issues around the Mars.
Yes, that should have. Yeah.
And I look at Jordan, her one son so far is 4/24/1981 at 8:48 p.m. in Redding, California. And Jordan is a very grounded chart where mom was all fire and air signs, Taurus with his Venus and Mercury in Taurus, Moon in Capricorn, and a Scorpio rising with Uranus on the ascendant. But and the yod in Jordan's chart is to Mercury, but Mercury is conjunct. It's just out of sign. It's in conjunct, is conjunct Pluto, Mars. Mars is at 29:55, almost. Mars is in Aries, just like his mom's. So, and Mars conjuncts Mercury within 2 degrees, which is at 2 degrees of Taurus. And those two planets together, so we have the Mars issue that the mom has, the child also has, and it's the unreconciled squares, grand trine, and inconjuncts of mom. The kid only has an inconjunct, really. And it forms and it's reconciled quite a bit compared to mom's chart, because there's a nice trine of the moon, a few other things. But
Mom actually is going to teach the child how to deal with that aspect.
Right. Mom has made great progress, and the child shows it.
Right.
The child is still dealing with the inconjunct with Jupiter at 1 degree of Libra, Uranus at 29 degrees of Scorpio, so it's just out of sign, both in conjuncting that Mars and that Mercury.
Nice. Okay.
So learning how not to speak, you know, this kid gets more stubborn than mom gets kind of quiet, you know, or intuitive and then volatile and then intuitive and then volatile. This kid has that can sometimes, it looks to me, speak more intensely, basically has a fairly even keel on the inside, but can sound more erratic than he intends with Uranus on the ascendant in Scorpio and Mercury conjunct Mars, and is in the habit of speaking more intensely and sharply sometimes than is acceptable because can cut to the quick and cut to the chase and get real very easily, but has that intensity of speech that may sometimes be too quiet because there's either I'm quiet or I'm difficult or I'm quiet or I'm difficult. Still resolving that issue. But that incisiveness, how do I use Mars in a good way? You know, it seems like the whole family is working on them. We'll pull up the youngest one next. But how do we, what is good Mars? What is a good warrior? What's the right fight? What is a hero? When are we being just being difficult? When are we being rebellious and so busy being alternative that we don't know what we want ourselves? And when are we fighting the good fight and protecting the underdog and, you know, questioning authority in the best of ways and speaking up when we need to for real truth? I mean, there's, it seems like there's some real issues on everybody so far in the family. The kids a lot farther. You know, the mom has obviously done a lot of work around it.
Right. Yeah. No,
yeah.
It's interesting.
Mark, what do you see?
Well, looking at the mom's chart,
mm-hmm.
it's interesting that the yod really is overlaid on a kite, because that opposition of Jupiter and Mars runs right through the grand trine, and it also is what runs through the yod. So she really is working on the Mars issues. Mars is really at the point mm-hmm. of all of this, and she's meant to use that, and it's a Mars and Aries, you know, super, very, very strong. And, you know, she's a Sag, so
mm-hmm.
she knows the energy of fire, and she's meant to use it. And I think there'd be kind of a back and forth with this Sun, because the mother is having to learn how to use that Mars energy on the run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Sun is kind of tempering that a little. So they'll both learn from each other. She'll be feeling it more intensely, you know, it kind of throws her around more, whereas mm-hmm. he's able to be more circumspect about it.
Right. And as he watches and witnesses it, you know, like when you're a kid watching your parents go through things, you form opinions about whether how you're planning on handling it. You know,
yeah.
I had read a guy back when I first started astrology, and he had a whole conflict about allowing himself to be artistic, and it was what he had seen play out with his parents in their relationship, and it had an impact on his life with his wife. And they had split up for a little bit at 7-year increments. So they had one child and they'd split up. He'd gone into therapy, done a lot of work on himself. Then they had another baby, got back together, got another baby. And it was like, can he be a parent and be an artist? And so the second child, interestingly, has no conflict at all. The first child has the conflict, but it shows it resolving when the child reaches about the age that the parent actually resolved it, the dad had resolved it. And the second child, total free flow, you know, totally not the issue, doesn't have it anymore, not in his chart in the least. You know, totally
mm-hmm.
sees
mm-hmm.
the parents as creative, father is creative, no conflict around his own creativity. You know, the first child is a little more tortured, you know, am I good enough, am I this enough, am I that enough? And it was very interesting to see the transformation and to be able to say, well, you resolved it, and see, this child has it, but this child doesn't. And so your job is with the child
yes,
that has it, you know, to help him resolve it so he can figure out how not to live like this. Like that you had to wait until you were in your 30s to figure it out. He figures it out younger, and you can show him how,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it was really interesting to watch the generational charts.
That's beautiful.
And how they show up.
It is.
Because,
isn't it fascinating to watch
the
family layers? Yes.
Yeah.
One of the things that I often hear parents then start berating themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I say,
I did
well,
something
often,
wrong.
It really feels to me the child was drawn to you because that's their issue to work on this lifetime.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because they came into this family that they have the problem, but they came to that the family because this is their issue to work on.
And they knew on some level
you
were going to figure it out. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that you were talking about the parents' unresolved squares that often show up in the child.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that in the mother, Mars is the focus of the yod. But Mars is also one corner of a T-square with Mercury and Jupiter, right? So that the unresolved square in mom is that Mercury-Mars square.
Right.
In the oldest child, we saw the Yod to a Mercury-Mars conjunction. And so even though that, Mom had it straight to the Mars, both of them have this Mars, one has resolved the conjunction rather than the opposition, so you can see the work the Mom did. And the third child has it just to the Mercury. Mm-hmm. And the third child's birth information is 6/9/83 at 8:40 a.m. in Wichita Falls, Texas.
And that's the third or the second child?
I'm sorry, that's the second child. The third chart, second child.
Uh-huh.
And this child is a Gemini moon in Taurus. And first of all, I see two kids whose mom, although she had very few earth signs represented in her chart, both of her kids have their moon in Taurus, so they saw her handling their life and the pragmatic approach that she took to her life, which is very good. Good work, Mom. So he's a Gemini moon in Taurus with a Cancer rising and has moon and Mercury conjunct. So there's, again, Mom's issue around the Mercury,
mm-hmm.
In a good way. But that Mercury is in conjunct Pluto and Saturn conjunct at 26 and 28 degrees of Libra on one side, and Neptune at 28 degrees of Sag on the other. So it's almost an inverted pattern here. Mars is not involved in this child's yod.
Nope.
The first one, so Mom had Mars and
Mercury. Mom, you've done good. You've worked it out, you know.
Done good. You're working it out, absolutely. And now it's how do we get our voice and speak and continue, even though we're not doing Mars issues all the time and being so difficult. We see strength in this child, stubbornness, very stubborn, but the strength, now how do you continue to find your truth and speak it?
All right. Very cool. Yeah, that's the evolution right there.
What do you see, Mark? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really interesting lineup. What do you see about that, Mars? Mark?
Well, that just that working out of issues and seeing mm-hmm. how it plays out, you know, in the overall dynamic. And so there's a shift in the family. And the second child doesn't experience the family conflict in the same way,
mm-hmm.
or the family challenges, the family mission, you know. There's a shift that comes about.
Kind of cool. I like
mm-hmm.
these things. And I have to say, I got us into the finally into Blog Talk. I have no idea what was having so much problem with, except Uranus is beating my little butt up. So our guest call-in number, if you want to call and ask us a question, is 347-215-8881, 347-215-8881, because I can actually see the switchboard and the callers. So feel free to call us if you have a question. So.
And I also got an email while we were waiting.
Yay!
from a Nina.
Mm-hmm.
And Nina says, I believe the next eclipse will widely conjunct my north node at 22 degrees Cancer in the third. What could this mean for me? I was born February 2nd, 1982 at 11:55 a.m. in the Bronx. February 2nd, 1982 at 11:55 a.m. in the Bronx. So the question comes back to Mark. We were talking about eclipses earlier in the evening. In general, we talked a little bit about, you know, if an eclipse hits a point on somebody's chart, it energizes it.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you see? I like to do whenever we have these questions is first to pose the theoretical question so that all the astrologers in the audience can learn from it, and then bring it to the specific case of the person at hand so that we can we can take that theory and apply it like we just did on the theory of the odds on those three charts. And family inheritance, and was a great example. So What do you think, Mark? I'd start with you because you had said some really great stuff about this at the beginning, about when an eclipse conjuncts a point in someone's chart and how do they work with it. And then let's take a look at Nina's chart to see how that applies.
We're talking about a transiting eclipse and
right.
when it comes through their chart. Yeah. Well, eclipses bring that big energy of change, and mm-hmm. it's often a change that comes about through people arriving or leaving from your life and mm-hmm. your things that you're doing in life. So there's kind of a changing of the guard as an eclipse comes. And it can be really quite sudden, and if it happens on an eclipse, it usually means that that person is really eclipsed from,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever your dealings were with that person.
Mm-hmm.
They're gone, and you know you have everything that you've gained from your experience with them. That's all still with you, so you know nothing's lost from that, but. The in your future going forward, the person is no longer there. So whatever your relationship is, it's a wrap. Now, you're going to continue processing. You're going to continue learning from it. You may run into other people that help you pick up whatever the lessons were and carry them forward, but that specific person is not playing the role anymore. And that can be very shocking when somebody leaves the stage, basically. They're gone from the... It's like, you know, if you follow a soap opera and then somebody gets written out of it, you know, they're gone. They're eclipsed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind
mm-hmm.
of the feeling of it, is, oh, that character's gone. Now what? And there can be a feeling of a vacuum at first. You know, they're irreplaceable. Life can't be
mm-hmm.
the same without that person. But then, of course, you know, you're here, you have your lessons to learn, you have your things to do, you have your needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so another player is going to come in, and it won't be the same. But you're going to go on, and you'll find that something about those issues is still going to work out in your life, but it's a different player and in a different way, or it can be more than one player that comes in to pick up where that person left off. So that's often the feeling that goes with an eclipse that's tightly connected into your chart. And when we say tightly connected, we mean that you have a significant point or planet that's within 1 degree of the degree of the eclipse. So it can be a degree before or a degree after or right on the eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
If it's more than that, then you feel it, but it's not as compelling.
And we see that this is supposed to be a total eclipse, but not something that we can see from anywhere near where we live.
No, it's in...
And it'll be on the 11th. And where do you say you can see it?
It's going to be Easter Island and Cook's Island. It's in the Pacific.
Right.
And it goes
right,
down to
right
Patagonia,
Pacific, so.
The bottom part of South America. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So we won't be seeing it. And sometimes that part of the world is more affected than the rest of us. But it is somewhere, whether or not we see it, we can feel it energetically,
mm-hmm.
astrologically. And it will be happening at 21 plus of Cancer. Is that correct, Anne?
19 Cancer.
I believe.
No, 21 Cancer.
Plus.
Yeah, 21 Cancer.
Plus.
I'm sorry. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm a little old today.
Right there. No, I think it is. I think you're right. It is 19. And
it rounds up to 20 of the Sabian
chart.
Images. Yeah. It's
okay,
20 of the Sabian images. Yep.
And mm-hmm. she has her south node at 21 Cancer. And her north node, I'm sorry. And her south node at 21 Capricorn conjunct Venus at 24 Capricorn. close enough so that she'll be feeling it there.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have a conjunction, it sort of makes a larger target, I think. And she also has a yod in her chart, because we're talking about yods, nataling. And as the moon is the ruler of the sign Cancer, and the moon is the what takes the pressure in her chart, it's interesting. I think that her yod is moon is the keynote with a Neptune Juno conjunction in the seventh and a and Pluto in the fifth, pointing into a yod into her moon in the 12th.
So it's a yod day.
So,
yes.
It's a yod day. And then we're not just speaking with a Boston accent.
Mm-hmm.
But with the what do you see, and both with that yod and with the eclipse coming up on her chart?
Well, I think the eclipse, you know, the thing I always find fascinating is the houses and the repetition over time. So what eclipses are is they're, you know, the lineup that Mark spoke about where everything's all in a row. So they're very potent because they're all kind of like a giant game of monkey in the middle. And, you know, they're kind of lined up, so there's a lot of energy force between the three things, you know, in synchronistic order, kind of a can-can dance across the heavens. I like to think of them as, when they're on the nodes, is they bring to light situations that are have been cooking for a while. So really what the eclipse is, in her case, because it's a nodal reversal, it's going to bring up issues from nine years ago when the eclipse happened at the same point. It's also going to bring up issues from 18 years ago. So if you go back in nine-year increments, this one is a reversal. So often reversals are kind of like magnets repelling each other. You know, you pull it in, you pull in somebody who's very different than you, and they are they're there to teach you something. You're coming in the sibling house, so they're there for you to learn something from or learn how to communicate better with. And then because they are opposite poles, they magnetize out. So if 9 years ago you had someone big come in, or 18 years ago in 1992, or, you know, 36 years ago in 1974, these points were hammered before by the eclipse. The other thing is this eclipse is an eclipse of healing. According to Bernadette Brady's book, Eagle and the Lark, she talks about it having a lot of energy around healing the body and diseases being found and, you know, waking up to something that you need to let go of to allow yourself to heal, or coming conscious of something that you need to heal. So when an eclipse takes place in the third house, I often think of it as waking up your mind on a different level. You know, wherever the eclipse takes place, that area is altered. So if it's the fifth house, you know, your creativity is altered. If it's the seventh house, it's your partner. You know, something alters and you go, oh my God, I never knew that before. And because it's a reversal, it can, in this sense, it can have a positive and negative, as opposed to, you know, just a releasing. Because this is technically a releasing eclipse.
Can you help just define your terms there on what a reversal is for the guy?
A reversal is her north node's in Cancer, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the south node is in Cancer for this particular eclipse. So they don't, you know, the little one head is kind of, you know, the one node is going up and the other node is going down. So what those act like is magnets. You know how when you have magnets and you try and get them near each other and they kind of fight with each other because they're the same polarity, but then if you get it to the right pop, they click together. So I think of nodal reversals as it's magnetizing. It's very attractive, but it also has a repelling quality because, like, the two magnet heads that you're trying to get to connect, they have to find the right place to hook in. Once they hook in, they're in for a while until the information is exchanged. So when you meet someone who's like 8 or 9 years younger or older than you, you're meeting someone who's a nodal reversal from yourself. So often they come in to teach you about the node that you don't know about. And you, in turn, teach them about the node that they don't know about. So in the case of Cancer Capricorn, south node is the desire to be a parent. Or Cancer is the desire to be a parent. So in this case, south node there is going to trigger you know, she may say, I really want to be a parent. I really want to be a parent, North Node in Cancer. I want to go towards being a parent. My sister's becoming a parent, my younger sibling. And then she sees how much work babies are, and she goes, you know, maybe I don't really want to be a parent. Maybe I want to be an aunt. You know, it kind of reverses your position on the thing. It changes your mind. It makes you go, well, I thought I wanted that, but maybe not. Or it educates you about the other person's position, which is the other way you can look at nodal reversals. Like you learn about the other kind of way to do it. Because often where we have the south node, we have an addictive energy. We don't necessarily know how to use it in a positive way because we're addicted to it. But we can watch someone else use it and go, man, they're really good at that. I wish I could be that good. And they have the node going the other direction, and you learn from them because their node teaches your node. It's kind of a cool thing, but it isn't always a sticky thing. It'll stick as long as the node, as long as the needed, kind of like those airplanes the Army uses, you know, as long as once the fuel's in the plane, then they unhook and everybody flies away. So the nodal reversal can unhook. So you want to watch if it's a reversal, where it hits. And also you'll often find you pull in people that are significant teachers or guides who have a nodal reversal for you, and then you pop them out when you've learned enough from them you don't need them anymore for that knowledge. Doesn't mean you end the relationship necessarily, but the transfer of knowledge is what I think of them as being about. Was that more clear? I'm having a lot of Mercury, man. I really just want to go to sleep. I love my life, but I want to go to sleep. Yeah, it's that kind of day. Yeah.
And Mark, what are you feeling about it? What are you seeing in her chart?
Well, because it's lining up with her node, she can really expect a change in personnel. So it's like being on stage with a cast of characters, and some of those characters are going to change. Mm-hmm. So, you know, don't be upset. You're going to see some people go off the stage and some new people come on, and, you know, that's meant to happen. So,
right.
You know.
One of the things that I'm seeing when I look at her chart is Venus in Capricorn conjunct the South Node. The South Node in Capricorn natally is a pattern where you feel like you just have to work harder. But you come into this life feeling like, you know, that our south node is often where we feel, you know, the old karmic issues, and hers might be around, you know, teeth and bones and knees and the hard parts of her body. But it's also a feeling that she has to work harder, and she has to be more ambitious, and she has to be more in control. And she's already explored that in other lifetimes, and she doesn't really need to do that here. But it's definitely a pattern. And her north node in Cancer says this time she needs to do it in a more nurturing and more receptive and healing pattern with herself and others. Rather than just work harder, work healthier. But she has that south node conjunct Venus in the ninth house, and I suspect there's been some control issues around women and with female friends that, as you said, Mark, are going to just, you know, either the control issues, the pattern, or the friend is going to go. And, you know, if she can let go of the pattern of controlling or being controlled by and move to a different paradigm. And that's echoed to me when I see Venus is in mutual reception with her Saturn, because her Saturn is in Libra, ruled by Venus, and Venus is in Capricorn, ruled by Saturn. And her Saturn is caught all there in the fifth house with Mars, Saturn, and Pluto all gemmed up together. So there's, and squaring her Venus. So there's long issues about trusting faith rather than control, trusting working with rather than making happen or being stuck made to happen, and moving out of the dynamics of control and into real cooperation. And into real cooperation that can only start when you know what you want. Then you can navigate what they want and find a place that works for both of you. So learning what she wants herself rather than deferring to others, and then asking for it directly without manipulating or being manipulated by, and moving into healthier relationships around, you know, work and particularly around the women in her life seems to be something that this eclipse might be hitting off. Because I agree with you, Mark, that it's, you know, some...
Yeah, definitely.
People or patterns are leaving.
Yeah. And it's people that she's dealt with that Mars, Saturn, Pluto conjunction in Libra. So it's people that she's experienced tension with and some conflict, and that her normal way of dealing with it is to kind of overly focus on whatever work needs to get done. But as Anne is pointing out, there's a call for healing going on at this time. And that's really a different enterprise from shunting the energy off into the project that's the most demanding. So she may find that it's some frustration gets in the way of actually trying to just, you know, lose all this energy into a work project.
Right.
And instead, there's a focus called for on healing now. So she should heed that call. Don't try to work it out.
Yes. And what do you see there?
Well, I think that, you know, I kind of agree with you guys. I think that when you're working with the eclipse energy, you know, the whole thing is to really recognize that it is an energy that you don't have control over, that the story will come to you, and that there is also on some level a sense of urgency with eclipses, that you feel like you have to do something immediately, and you actually don't, but you feel like you do. You feel like, you know, and you're kind of like, calm down, you don't have to do anything right just yet, it'll be okay. And if you give yourself time and space to kind of breathe, you actually know what you want to do. So for all of you who are going to have eclipses this week, because we all are, it is a new moon eclipse, and it is about new beginnings. So you want to kind of take some time on Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon to sit down and go through what your vision is for yourself, because the eclipse is at, actually Sunday afternoon, 3:40 in the afternoon on the East Coast time, so... And eclipses are powerful, powerful stuff. Plus,
yeah,
they also do a whole thing about, we had a caller and they just disappeared. I don't know. This is just not my night. Well, no, they were 303 Denver. I'm sorry you left us. I saw you there. We were going to call on you. Now they're gone. Ah, well, 303 got tired. They left and went home. But I think the other thing to remember with eclipses is that there is a volatility to them. And... you know, maintaining your head is actually a good way to kind of focus the energy. So, And the other thing this week we have
phrase that always helped me with eclipses is when one door closes, three open, and that often that if it's hitting on your chart, you know, I take them seriously because I've seen them do dramatic things in my chart life.
Man,
but
yeah, they're huge.
In the long run, it has always been for the better. And it is, I see this is closing. Where can I find what's opening? And
right.
Remember that flow. You know, room is being created for what?
Well, an opening is right across the chart in the North Node in Capricorn. You're getting pulled towards being more of an authority or more of a senior person in your life. You're being asked to do your Saturn and to be an authority and to take responsibility.
Take on some form of personal authority.
Yeah, a personal authority or personal responsibility, yeah. So, and we always look to see where the eclipse takes place, and then you look at the nodal axis across the other side is where it is. 303 came back. Yes, 303, we're going to get you. We got 6 minutes left. We're going to pull you on. 303,
great.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
You're welcome. Good. Did you have a question for us?
I did. I was wondering if you guys could take a quick look at my chart and maybe give me a little guidance on how to handle this cardinal cross that's facing us. It seems to be in sort of powerful points in my chart. So,
okay, your birth information.
May 20.
When were you born?
May 20, 1971. Salt Lake City, Utah.
And what time?
8:50 p.m.
8:50 p.m. in Salt Lake.
Yes.
And you're asking about how those cardinals the cardinal square is going to hit you.
Big, big. You're going to get hit big. It's good. All changing. Yeah, ready to let it go. Release, release. That's your job. Release, release.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, end of a 30-year cycle.
But it's not, you know, it's not too terrible. I mean, it's you've got May 20th, and your moon in Aries will be getting it towards the end. And, yes, you have a lot of things around 3 and 4 degrees, but not heavily in cardinal signs. So you're going to feel it later on. It's like you've got some changes in your life coming towards the end of the squares. You know, I would say around 2014, but because you're going to be doing the metamorphosis on the inside first, because you're dealing with everybody else changing around you. So
okay.
It's not so event-prone, you know what I mean? It's not so eventful for you, but it'll be eventful for the people that you know, and then your life change, then you change in response to that, and then your life changes in response to the changes in you.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense.
And also, what you're really feeling is Saturn on your Pluto. You're coming to the end. Yeah, that's the biggie. You're transiting Saturn on your Pluto, ending a 30-year cycle. You've been struggling with it since last fall. And it's actually leaving now, okay? And the T-square is amping it up because Jupiter and Uranus kind of pushed on it and all this stuff. But it's really about you. If we look at Pluto as the owner of, you know, Scorpio sign, it's about you changing your relationship to your hopes and dreams and changing your relationship to your spiritual path. So the developmental pressure is enormous, and it's also about releasing whatever the power over dynamic is, because Saturn is saying to you, look at the story you do with power over, or that was done to you about power over, because Pluto's high in the chart. What's your belief about power and abuse of power? And you need to focus on that, and that will calm the T-square down. Because Saturn's up there helping Pluto, work this out. And you do have a nice trine of Saturn and Pluto trined, right, in your chart. But right now they're fighting in the sky. So natally, you kind of do the Virgo thing. Your Sun and Saturn goes to Virgo, defaults to let me take care of the situation, let me humble myself, let me just kind of do whatever I can to solve it. And right now that's not going to work. You have to say, no, we're not doing this anymore. We got to stop. And you got to be more Saturnian. You have to be the authority in the room because the other people maybe aren't. And if you do that, that will calm it down enormously, and it will make it feel much less like you want to run away and hide. The Uranus-Jupiter is trining your Jupiter-Neptune, so it's saying, I really just want to disappear and not be seen. But you
can't
do that now. You got to kind of suck it up and put your chest up and your chin down and stand there and go, no, I don't think we're going to do that this time. And everybody will go, whoa, what happened to her? And you'll find that they all go along with you. And you'll be like, whoa, how come they're all listening to me? Because that's what the universe wants you to do. It wants you to claim your authority and not be afraid of it. It's hard, but you can do it. You're going to be fine. But it does feel very stressful.
The first time Saturn hits my Pluto, I really, within a couple of days, I actually did lose my job,
mm-hmm.
but I have another job now, so I've been a little nervous what might happen, you know, as it retrogrades.
Off of it now. You're done with it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about when Saturn hits my natal Uranus?
Well, that's in the fall. Don't worry about that. That's like not until October. And Uranus in the third is, mm-hmm. you know, it rules your Mars and it rules your North House. They may ask you to do something you don't agree with. Or they may give you a raise and a promotion, you know, because it's in your second house and your third house. But that's coming.
You're growing up so fast
mm-hmm.
this year, you know, and also at the same time as you're experiencing that, Uranus is trining your Jupiter on the ascendant. So there's a real fight in your chart between the part of you that wants freedom and the part of you that wants security. And that's a lifelong issue in your chart. And you keep having to say, I have to find a balance where I have both. I can't choose between the two of them. That's like asking which leg to stand on.
Right.
Okay. And we're going to have to get off
the
now.
The British lady came on and said 30 seconds.
Back again.
Yeah. And thank you for
thank
calling
you.
Back after I saw you and you disappeared. It was good. So.
Thank you. Thank you for looking at my chat. I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck with the cross.
Okay.
Have fun.
Yeah. You call back.
All right,
and
so we're done. We're done, and I actually got in. We got a caller. How exciting. We have 49 seconds remaining. Yes.
So last words of advice for people facing the week ahead is, again, remember to look for the doors that are opening as those close. Take care of your energy so that because it'll be buzzy at 1 minute and exhausted another. Just kind of pace yourself and work on evening out your energy. And this is Heather sounding out from St. Paul. Mark, what's your last words of advice and how to reach you?
Mark Waltz in New York City, and you can reach all of us at astronyc.com, astronyc.com, and send us a note or contact any of us.
Our websites are all on the Blog Talk page.
Right. And
we're saying goodbye from Anne.
And Anne. Anne in my bright red desk on the Upper East Side with the air conditioner on. Because it's 100 degrees
Wonderful.
Here in New York City.
We'll speak to you all next week.
Yes. We'll have a great
Take
week,
care.
Folks. Remember to enjoy the eclipse and just remember to breathe. And also, there are three planets changing signs this week. So there's going to be a lot of turbulence. So just, again, remember, it's a transit. It'll pass. Take care. Bye-bye.
And it can be fun. Goodbye.
And if you happen to be in Patagonia, look up.
Or on Easter Island, you know?
Right.
All right. Bye, guys.
Take care.